AAN, Radio Atlantic.
We have cloudy skies here at the KJN studios and 54 degrees here this morning. And we expect here today some rain throughout the morning hours and possibly through midday, remaining cloudy with a high of 79 and then a chance of some showers and thunderstorms overnight here as well. Good morning. I'm Chris Parks with a check of the latest in-state and local news on KJAN. In area news and an update to an earlier story from last night, the Shelby County Sheriff's Office early this morning confirmed one person died in a head-on crash on Highway 59 just outside of Harlan on Friday evening. The Shelby County Communications Center received a call at 5:58 p.m. Friday about a two-vehicle accident in the 1100 block of Highway 59. An initial investigation showed that a 2003 Buick Park Avenue was traveling southbound on Highway 59, while a 2018 Chevy pickup was traveling northbound, pulling a camper. The Buick Park Avenue crossed the center line and struck the pickup head-on. Both vehicles came to rest on the west shoulder of the roadway after the collision. The driver of the Park Avenue, 75-year-old Albert Carlson of Kirkman, was trapped in the vehicle and had to be extricated by mechanical means. He was pronounced dead at the scene by a Shelby County medical examiner. The driver and passenger of the other vehicle were not injured. The Shelby County Sheriff's Office was assisted by the Iowa State Patrol, Harlan Fire and Rescue, Harlan Police, Medevac Ambulance, Shelby County Emergency Management, Iowa DOT, and the Pauly Jones Funeral Home. The accident remains under investigation by the Iowa State Patrol. Governor Kim Reynolds on Friday issued a proclamation extending existing proclamations of disaster emergency for flooding and severe weather that began in March. The extension allows state resources to continue to be utilized to respond to and recover from the effects of the severe weather. It also suspends length of stay and fee requirements at Waubonsie State Park located in Fremont County, which was a concern for some folks that have been there for a while. For more information, you can visit the DNR Disaster Assistance website or the Waubonsie State Park website, both of which are linked on this same story on our news page. The proclamation is effective through October 8th of this year. Sheriff's officials in Fremont County Friday afternoon issued an update on an investigation into a report of an attempted child abduction in Tabor on May 31st. Authorities say it was determined through interviews and video evidence that no such incident ever occurred. The investigation determined that a juvenile reported a possible abduction that did not occur. That juvenile was referred to an outside agency and was not charged in the case at this time. A second juvenile who reported themselves as an eyewitness later advised that they supplied false information and did not witness the reported abduction attempt. That juvenile was charged with false reporting to a public entity, a simple misdemeanor, and was referred to juvenile court services. Due to the ages of the parties involved, their identifying information will not be released. Red Oak police report 37-year-old Jesse Donald Trost of Red Oak was arrested at around 7:15 p.m. Friday for breach of peace. Trost was taken into custody in the 200 block of North Broadway Street and transported to the Montgomery County Jail, where his bond was set at $300. The Cass County Auditor's Office on Friday updated the list of candidates who have filed nomination papers for the November 5th city and school elections. And the list is as follows. For the Atlantic City Council, 3rd Ward, Pat McCurdy, who was appointed to that position. 4th Ward, Linda Harkoff, the incumbent. And at large, there will be a vote for one, and currently two names have filed papers, Grace Garrett and Dana Halder, who is an incumbent. And for the Oneida City Council, they'll be voting on two, and two names have been submitted so far, Mark Harris and Kevin Littleton. For the Oneida City Mayor, Thomas R. Harris has filed nominating papers. And for the Griswold City Council, they'll be voting on three, and one name so far filing papers, Carmen Sorensen. The deadline to file those nomination papers is September the 19th. In Montgomery County, they have listed their recent nominations as well. In the city of Elliott, those filing their papers thus far, including incumbent city council members Travis Johnson and Jessica Rasmussen. In Stanton, incumbent Mayor Kirk Requist has filed papers for re-election. In Grant, four incumbent council members have filed for re-election, Jeff Brown, Zelda Schwartz, Steve Williams, and Nancy Taylor. School board candidates and community college trustees must file their nomination papers with the school board or community college board secretary, respectively. And, of course, then city candidates filing their papers with their respective county auditor's office. And again, that deadline coming up on September the 19th. Union County officials have approved plans for a Mid-American Energy wind farm in the northwest part of the county. The Union County Board of Supervisors issued a permit for up to 36 turbines this week. Union County engineer Zach Gunsley says the sites Mid-American selected fall within the guidelines of a county ordinance that was adopted this spring.
1,250 feet from the nearest residence if they were participating, 1,500 feet away from a residence or a church, 1 mile from parks.
Mid-American plans to erect 38 wind turbines in neighboring Adams County as well. A Mid-American representative told Union County officials the company expects to start construction next spring. On Tuesday, officials in Madison County will hold a public hearing on a proposed moratorium for new wind and solar projects in their county. The USDA will spend up to $36 million to buy Iowa land that was damaged by Missouri River flooding this past spring. Radio Iowa's O.K. Henderson reports.
The money to pay landowners comes from the USDA's Emergency Watershed Protection Program. Iowa property owners in the flood zone may apply to permanently turn the land over to the federal government for a conservation easement. The easements will be restored to the natural floodplain. The buyouts are available for public or private farmland as well as residential properties damaged by flooding. Applications may be submitted to Natural Resources Conservation Service offices through October 18th. I'm O.K. Henderson.
In other news, the Iowa Economic Development Authority awarded more than $2 million to seven towns Thursday in what are called community development block grants. Authority spokesperson Nicole Hansen says the grant money is provided by the federal government for water and sewer system improvements.
It is a competitive program. We do receive more requests than we're able to fund, unfortunately.
And also Anthon, Blairstown, Fontenelle, Gutenberg, Lake Park, and Messina, and St. Olaf all were awarded grants in this round. Fontenelle received $300,000 in grant for a local match of $1,627,500 for wastewater treatment plant improvements. Messina's grant of $300,000 plus a local match of $1,852,000 is also for wastewater plant improvements. Hansen says there are several factors involved in the selection process.
We take a look at project need. We take a look at project impact and readiness. We also take a look at the benefit to low and moderate income persons. One of the national objectives with the federal CDBG program is benefit to low and moderate income individuals.
The grants are targeted to smaller communities in the state.
The largest communities in Iowa, the Davenport, Des Moines, those communities with populations over 50,000, they received their own community development block grant allocation from the federal government. So they are not able to apply for the state program because they received their own allocations.
Communities that didn't get grants this time have another chance before the end of the year.
We are accepting applications currently. That application window will close on October 1st, and then we'll make awards in November for the fourth quarter. And then we'll open it up again on January 1st for 2020.
Hansen says they usually have around $10 million to award each year. And Rex Pharmacy's locations on Chestnut Street in downtown Atlantic and at the Atlantic Medical Center will be closing next week in preparation for their move to the former Sears store at 1607 East 7th Street. On March 1st, Josh Bohr, the president and owner of Rex Pharmacy in Atlantic, announced plans for its two current Atlantic locations, Rex Pharmacy Downtown and the Atlantic Medical Center Pharmacy, to merge and become one pharmacy located in the former Sears building across the street from the Atlantic Shopping Plaza. Bohr says progress on the refurbished building has been progressing nicely, and they're on track for a go-live date on September 16th. The current Atlantic locations will be closing late next week, beginning with the Atlantic Medical Center site.
We're going to do everything we can to minimize the amount of disruption, but there is a lot of technology and pieces that need to be moved. So the Atlantic Medical Center Pharmacy will be closing on Thursday the 12th at 5 o'clock. So it'll go through its normal hours at 5 o'clock. It will close that night. We will merge all that data down to the Rex location. So any Atlantic Medical Center patients that need to get something filled the next day, they can contact the Rex Pharmacy at 243-2110, and they can fill things at Rex Pharmacy.
The downtown store will close at noon on Friday, September 13th, in preparation for technology transfers to the new location. The pharmacy will still be available for emergency needs, but if you see you're running low on prescriptions or medical supplies, be sure and order those as soon as possible in advance of the closing. The new pharmacy at the former Sears store will be open for business on September 16th. As for the downtown pharmacy, Boris says they're still exploring options for the building so it doesn't stay vacant for too long.
We've had some interest, and really, to be honest, we have so much to move out of here that we haven't had as much thought and focus on that, but certainly we'll be shifting in the next couple of weeks. Our focus will be shifting towards finding a good home for this building.
In March, Boer said the plans were the result of Rex Pharmacy's desire to make community pharmacy a more viable part of patient outcomes in Atlantic and the surrounding area. Rex Pharmacy has been in its current 6,000-square-foot location on Chestnut Street in downtown Atlantic for more than 75 years, which is why Boer says it was a tough decision to make the change. He said they've had a lot of feedback since their announcement of the move.
And I would say, by and large, mostly positive. I think our team and the people are excited to have the new building with the drive-through. Our team is really excited to kind of get all under one roof. You know, operating in two separate areas of town is just, it's not as efficient as it can be. So we're excited about the efficiency that we can put in and what that means to our customer service levels, ultimately what we're after. So we believe it'll be a much better experience overall. You know, I think the concerns are probably the same concerns we had, and that's, you know, we want to make sure that we can fill this building with something that brings value to the downtown. That was probably the hardest decision for us to come to, was leaving the downtown.
And that new pharmacy will also have private clinical rooms for patient medication reviews, education, consultations, and immunizations. That's a look at news. Now taking a look at your funeral announcements this morning. Doug Smoke Callie, age 68, of Guthrie Center, died on Wednesday. A memorial service for Doug Smoke Callie will be held on today at 11 a.m. at the Bowman's United Methodist Church in rural Guthrie Center. Twig Funeral Home Guthrie Center has arrangements. Ruth McKinstry, age 85, of Harlan, died on August 26th at Elmcrest Retirement Community in Harlan. Funeral services for Ruth McKinstry will be held here today at 11 a.m. at the Polly Jones Funeral Home in Harlan. Carol Myers, age 72, of Atlantic and formerly of Avoca, Anchorage, Alaska, and New York City, died August 30th at the Heritage House in Atlantic. Visitation for Carol Myers will be held on here today from 1 to 3 p.m. at the Roland Funeral Home in Atlantic. No formal service will be held. Everett Britson, age 94, of Atlantic, died Thursday at home. A celebration of life for Everett Britson will be held on Monday at 11 a.m. at St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Atlantic. Roland Funeral Service of Atlantic has the arrangements. Mary Beth Campbell, age 76, of Harlan, died Thursday at Mertu Medical Center in Harlan. A massive Christian burial for Mary Beth Campbell will be held Monday at 11 a.m. at St. Michael's Catholic Church in Harlan. Polly Jones Funeral Home in Harlan has the arrangements. And Adelia Graham, age 72, of Atlantic, died on Tuesday at her home. Per her wishes, cremation will take place, and there will be no formal services for Adelia Graham. And Hockenberry Family Care Funeral Home in Atlantic has arrangements. That's a look at your news and funeral announcements here on KJAN. I'm Chris Parks, KJAN News.